This is the end. Beautiful friend. This is the end. My only friend. The end.
This morning I was having breakfast with my mother. And she just turned to me. We were watching TV. And she just turned to me and said, "Don't you ever get tired of watching movies?"
Okay.
I just stared at her for a few moments in silence, thinking, "What do you mean? I don't understand." And then I just said, like, "This is not a movie," because we were watching a TV show.
Okay.
Thing that people do, like, I'm watching a TV show and they'd say, "Oh, what's that movie?" And like, it's not a movie.
Really?
I had a similar thing yesterday because I watched like all three before movies yesterday, and then I was watching Melancholia for our episode, and I was also like joining Melancholia because I was kind of distracted throughout, so I was also Skyping with my friends, like I was chatting, Skyping, whatever, and they're like, "How do you watch so many movies? I can't even watch one movie." Like, well, I don't know.
Yeah,
what to
I know.
Say.
A lot of people say that.
Yeah, she's like, I have problems watching, like, just sitting down and watching one movie, like, one of my friends.
Yeah.
And then but then I had, like, the same thing. I was like, but I haven't watched many movies. There's so much left to watch.
Yeah, even I had a conversation with two friends, but it was a bit different. They said that they just didn't understand what was that great about movies, like, they would watch maybe two in a month, and then it would be too hard, they said. They said it's easier watching TV shows and stuff, so. But I don't know.
Well, I can ask what's so interesting about a soccer game.
Right, yeah.
I could say the same thing to them, so.
Yesterday I had, like, I mean, this is one of the reasons why I despise cricket, because yesterday Inglourious Basterds was coming on TV. And this was, like, you know, after, like, even when I wasn't watching a movie, this was coming on TV, and I wanted to watch that, but then there was, like, this really important cricket match going on, and then, like, my dad and I were kind of fighting over the remote. So, yeah, that's weird.
Welcome to all visitors from across the universe. You are listening to the Across the Universe podcast, brought to you by the Chicks with Accents. Hola, I'm Sophia, and I blog at Filmfare from Portugal.
Moin, I'm Metz from Germany, and I blog at Lime Reviews and Strawberry Confessions.
Namaste, I'm Nikhat, or Nick, and I blog at Being Norma Jean, and I'm from India.
All right, now before we begin, let's listen to a podcast trailer from a fellow member of the Lime Podcasting Network. We'll be right back.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lime Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
He brings the popcorn. She brings the roses. Subject Cinema, a tasty new film topic each week with a side order of film reviews.
Yum.
T.C. Kirkham.
Ba-dum-ching.
Kim Brown.
What?
Over 500,000 listeners, and you could be the next one. SubjectCinema.com. Real movies for real people.
Okay. We'll begin with the interesting movie of the fortnight feature, where each of us presents a film we've seen in the past 2 weeks, that is, since our last episode, and consider it to be worth sharing no matter the reason why. So, I watched Ieri, Oggi, Domani, that is, Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, for the Dynamic Duos in Classic Film Blogathon. I don't know if you noticed, which was... it was hosted by Classic Movie Hub and Once Upon a Screen, which is a blog run by Aurora, which I love.
Yeah, I wrote a post too, but blogger deleted it, so I had a very small post, but not a big one.
Still, that sucks.
Yeah.
Well, back to the movie. This is a film from 1963. It was directed by Vittorio De Sica, and it stars Marcello Mastroianni and Sophia Loren, which was the duo that I chose for the event.
Nice.
It's very nice. Yeah. They're both very.
They're very sexy.
Very, very. And the film is too. Is the, I don't know if you've seen the movie. Have any?
No.
Well, so the film is in fact three short stories. Each of them are about a woman and her male love interest, or one of them. And all of them are portrayed by Lorraine and Mastroianni, which makes it really interesting because you see two of them in three different stories. And the first is about Adelina. She's married and she is deeply in debt. I think there's it's something to do with the furniture. And the only thing that is keeping her from going to jail is the fact that she's pregnant. And so she keeps getting pregnant like over and over again until her husband is Carmine, I think. He can't handle it anymore. He can't do it. He can't get her pregnant. It's time. So it's very funny. And then the second one is much more intriguing and serious. It's very sexually charged. It is about an affair between a woman who is married to a rich businessman. She's very spoiled. And she, that is Anna. It's her name. And she has an affair with an artist. I think writer. It's not clear. But his name is Renzo. And she's very sophisticated, like Sophia Loren is. And he's very handsome. And the whole thing is set in a car, like it's just, it's a small car ride, just that, the whole short.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one is about Mara. She's a prostitute and she, this one is really charming and really, really funny. Like there's this young soon to be priest who is staying with his grandmother next door. And he sees her and feels attracted to her, which will cause a series of troubles. And meanwhile, her current client, Augusto, is just, you know, he's just trying to be with her. You know, he's a client, so, and he's becoming very, very desperate for her attention. That's Mastroianni, who is just so funny in this. He's hilarious. So, yeah, it's a really good movie. And, you know, the, like you said, Nick, the reason I chose these two actors for the blogathon is because they have such a great chemistry together. When they were the it on-screen couple of the 60s and 70s, I mean, even outside Italy. And so it's really a treat to watch them. And there's that Italian romance that is irresistible. And it's very sweet and fiery and extremely intimate at times. All very natural. Actually, I've said it on the article I've wrote, that sometimes we feel embarrassed watching it, like we're intruders, you know, that feeling, like they're so natural and intimate mm-hmm. together that you almost feel guilty watching them. So I'd recommend this to anyone who, whether you're familiar with the actors or not.
Okay.
I don't think I've actually watched a Sophia Loren movie. I mean, me obviously neither. Everyone knows who she mm-hmm. is, but yeah.
I hadn't watched many either.
But I've only watched, I've watched 8 and a half and I've watched La Dolce Vita, so.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I still haven't watched La Dolce Vita.
Oh, it's cool.
It's really cool.
Like, I'm imagining him, like, really sophisticated. I don't know if that's how
But he's kind of, like, an ass dude.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, that can be
like, sexy. A bit snobby.
Yeah? Yeah, but he's really hot, so it's
cool. He is.
And she's gorgeous, right? The actress who plays opposite him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The blonde chick.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, I mean, I don't know. I was kind of so annoyed with her in the movie because she was really stupid.
Yeah.
But she had that special charm, I think.
Yeah, and she that... did. But you know, then like she just goes and she like I don't know plays in the fountain. And I don't know, those things really annoy me, so it's just like that.
Weren't you just jealous of her? Because she was Mastroianni.
That, but he was with like five other women in the movie, so something like that, so it's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Next is Matt, right?
Yeah.
Show your movie.
The movie I wanted to talk about is a new movie from 2000. Well, it played on a festival last year, but it got a normal release this year, and it's Spring Breakers. directed by Harmony Korine. My first movie of his, actually, that I watched. I had read a lot of reviews on this movie, and it seems that the general opinion is really, I don't know, some people just love it and some just hate it. So, but I actually really liked it a lot. I thought it was awesome. It's just the story is very simple. It's a few friends, four friends who rob a, I don't know, a restaurant or something, and they 'cause they want to go to spring break and they don't have enough money for that, so they do that and they go to spring break and have a fun time there, and but yeah, then some bad things happen and they meet a gangster called Al,
Alien.
yeah, Alien, played
That's
by
brilliant.
James Franco, who is also awesome in this movie. And yeah, so the story isn't that that complicated or anything, and I just loved how it was just a very visual movie that it didn't have a lot of dialogue at the beginning, and you sort of just get thrown into it, and the story just evolves very naturally, and I felt that all the things that happened, they were just so natural, and I don't know if they, I'd say realistic, because of course you don't necessarily meet a gangster on your spring break or whatever, but it's a beautiful movie. It's really well shot. Yes, there are a lot of titties, but I thought it was really beautiful, was very bright, and I actually also loved all the actresses. I don't generally hate Disney, so of course I did like Vanessa Hudgens and Selena Gomez, but I didn't expect them to be that good as they were in this movie. I thought they were really good, especially Vanessa Hudgens. She got some sort of daring scenes, and Ashley Benson is great too, and Harmony Korine's wife, Rachel Korine, is great. Yeah, and as I said, James Franco just hits the whatever. He's just really, really cool in this movie. I didn't think he could handle a role like this, because it's really something I haven't seen from him before. So yeah, cool movie and I would really recommend it. I don't know how it got a 5.7 rating on IMDb. I don't think it deserves such a low rating. But of course, it's not a movie for everyone, but I really loved it. Have you seen it?
Me,
I
I actually raised my hand. No one can see me.
have.
Anyways, no, I really, and like, I w it would be like the awesomest thing ever if Franco gets nominated for that role.
Yeah,
He should.
he
He
should,
should.
definitely.
But it's just, it's so like off. It's such a non-academy movie that I don't know. It was very cool. And you know, then you like think about like the things it's trying to say, because it's kind of like, I mean, I didn't read many reviews before watching the movie, but I did read a few afterwards. And then you know, like they talk about like the American dream and things like that, and how it's a satire, but it's not also.
I don't know if it is. It's hard to say.
But it, because it's, yeah, because it's, and like for, because I don't know, I think, I don't know, it was, you know, the scene with the piano, right? When he sings, okay, this is for Sophia. He basically, okay, in the movie, James Franco has this giant white piano, and he sits down and he sings Britney Spears every time, okay? Okay. And he has like three of the chicks over there, and basically they become like a part of his gang, okay? And they go around like busting spring breakers and like stealing their money and stuff. And you know, like with his singing it, then it changes to Britney singing and all that stuff. And I thought it was so cool, because if such a movie, if it was made like, I don't know, 20, 30 years before, you know, those kind of scenes usually have like some really classical opera kind of music playing, you know, yeah. like something really violent or something is going on, mm-hmm. right? Like you can imagine it, right? Like,
yeah.
But like this movie actually like takes pop culture in there, and it like it just, I don't know, it was like I love the pop culture aspect of it, you know. It was
Me
so
too.
Bright and
cool, colorful,
like that.
And
yeah, it's a really pretty movie too. Like it's.
Yeah,
it's very beautiful.
And I love the way they talk to each other. The girls,
yeah,
just felt like some normal friends. Felt very natural.
It was like, you know, when they kept repeating the dialogues and things.
Mm-hmm.
It was so original. I really liked that. Like,
yeah.
It was nothing like I've ever seen before. So it was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So
okay.
My turn.
Yeah, Nick.
So my movie is Sympathy for Lady Vengeance, which is the last part in Park Chan Wook's Vengeance trilogy.
Mm-hmm. Never heard of it.
The first one is have you heard of Old Boy?
Yeah.
Old Boy is the second part of this trilogy.
Okay.
The first one is Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance. That's the only one I haven't watched.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this is like this is the third part, and I've watched a few Chan Wook's movies so far, and except like there's one called I Am a Cyborg, but that's okay. Except that one, I have really loved all of them, including this one, because
mm-hmm.
I think people who are listening, they can understand. Like I have a thing for like really visual, violent movies and TV shows. Okay, and he is that kind of a director. Okay, he has a really good sense of like making really visual movies and making really violent movies. And this was one such movie. It's about a woman, Lee Gum Ja, who basically she gets strongly convicted for kidnapping and killing a 5-year-old child. And then she's imprisoned for 13 years, and she's able to get out because she's like really, really sort of kind-hearted and angelic in the prison, and you know she gets like pardoned and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all like part of her plan, because as her, she wants to get out to like catch like the real culprit and take revenge from him. And so that's like the revenge part again, like. But it's from the visual thing, like the actress who played her, Lee Young A, she was very beautiful. Okay, and you could see like the angelic thing, but what they show her as, like she wants to like, you know, like shed off this angelic angelic look for herself. Okay, so
mm-hmm.
she has like, she puts on like blood red eyeshadow, and she wears like high heels and things. So she like, more than anything in the movie, I was most struck by her,
yeah,
like in a visual sense. But you know, there was like there's a lot of snow in there because the color white plays a really important part, because it's all about her trying to purify her sins and stuff. So that visual thing, it really gets it. And my first Park Chan-wook movie was Old Boy, right? And if you've seen Old Boy, it's like, it's very, very violent, okay? And I thought, you know, all of his movies would be like that, you know? They would have that really high level of violence in them. But I think ever since that, all the other ones I've watched, they're much less, they have a lot more like, they're not as violent, okay? They have like a softer sort of side to them. And this one, I thought especially, was very, very vulnerable, because she's also a mother. She goes and she gets a daughter, like when she was in prison, she had a daughter. So she's like a mother, and she's also very lost and things like that. And I really liked that, you know, the violence and like her struggles with becoming this person, even though I don't think she was naturally that violent. So I really liked that aspect of it. And like, when the actual violence happens, it's, like, unlike anything. So, yeah. So, it was, like, by the end of the movie, the only thing, like, the only word I could use to describe it was poetic. Because it had, like, even, like, amongst all, even, like, the way she gets her revenge, and the way it looks and the way her character is and all that stuff. It just has like this very poetic quality to it. So I thought, yeah, I really loved it.
Well, it's been recommended to me, but I never got around to watch it because I never usually watch Japanese. Is it Japanese? I'm sorry.
It's Korean.
Okay. See? I never usually watch Korean movies or Asian, for that matter.
I like watching them, but I don't often get around to watch them. It's always, oh, I want to see more Asian movies, but I just never do.
Exactly, exactly. But I've been told that Old Boy, it's really, really good.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's really twisted.
I've been told that too.
Uh-huh.
It's awesome, I think. I really love it, but yeah. And this year, like, so far, like, Stoker is my favorite feature movie, and that's by Park Won-chuk also. That's his English movie, so first English movie.
Cool.
Yeah.
Isn't there going to be some new Old Boy or something?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Spike Lee remade it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. I am sort of, because I really liked the trailer.
Yeah.
And I love the people involved.
Who's so, in there?
There's Josh Brolin. There's Elizabeth Olsen.
Ooh.
And there's Samuel L. Jackson. I cannot for the life of me remember what character Samuel L. Jackson is playing. and there's Charlton Copley, you know, the guy from District 9.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, okay, because that guy is like amazing. Like, in District 9 was his first movie, and he's just like, I could never believe that that's his first movie. And he's playing the villain, and Old Boy, in Old Boy, like the Korean one, I loved the villain. It was like one of the most incredible villains I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to see what Copley does with him.
Discussion, we've chosen a particular theme, which is apocalyptic movies, that is, films about the end of the world, keeping in tune with the recently released World War Z. Each of us has picked a film, all of us have seen them, and now we will discuss them. So, I brought War of the Worlds.
This thing was a machine. It crawled out of the ground, started torturing everything, just killing everybody.
What is it? Is it terrorists?
This came from someplace else.
What do you mean, like Europe?
No, Robbie, not like Europe!
The Steven Spielberg version, because I've always felt, in a way, like this movie has been slightly forgotten over the years, or just reduced to your typical TV movie status, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the kind of movie that if you turn on TV on a rainy day, chances are it will be on.
Yeah,
I completely forgot that Spielberg had directed it.
Me too.
See?
And
see?
I actually watched it for the first time on TV, so it's a TV movie.
No, I went and watched it, and okay, I should make a confession. The thing is, my War of the Worlds DVD stopped working at I think 20 minutes,
okay,
like before the end. But since I have like a pretty good idea of what happened, and I did look at like the Wikipedia page.
Okay.
So that's what, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's not the best part of the film. So
no.
It didn't really
a bit obvious.
Lose all that much. So for anyone who, I don't know, hasn't watched TV in like 10 years, War of the Worlds is it's loosely based on the H.G. Wells novel by the same name, and it tells the story of an alien invasion with the clear intent of exterminating the entire human race. And what sets this tale apart from your average alien invasion movie is the fact that the alien machines, the tripods, they have been buried right under our feet for millions of years. And this was actually a big change that Spielberg made, because it felt like the usual spaceships were cliche, right? So amidst all the chaos, we follow a family. That is Ray. He's played by Tom Cruise. He's a divorced lawyer who was in charge of his two children on that fateful day. That is a little girl played by Dakota Fanning and a teenage boy played by Justin Chadwick, which I didn't remember that was him. And like, I've seen Shameless and now I've seen that. And it's like, so he's a teenager. It's like, oh, okay.
He was so annoying though in the movie.
Yeah.
I was like, stop trying to go to war. What are you doing?
I know.
But okay. It's in his right to do that. Okay. So, maybe you'll agree that I think that the first half of the movie is perfect. Like, I really think that it is. It quickly establishes the relationship status between the main characters, like the fact that the father doesn't have a close relationship with his children, mm-hmm. and so on. So I think that was a very smart move, because it quickly skips all the usual scenes that are really irrelevant that happened before a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's very effective, and it moves on very quickly to what it really matters, which is the invasion and the whole chaos. So, and I think that when the storm begins and the aliens first appear, like the whole sequence, it's masterful. It's like a true thriller. I think it's actually really classy. So. I think it's very refined, and it was very well planned, and I think it's very scary.
Yeah.
And very memorable. Right. I don't know if you remember the movie while watching it.
I didn't find it that scary, but I was surprised at how good the effects were. The
Despite
special effects.
Being from 2005. Right?
Yeah. It was sort of good.
It's still very current. It is.
Mm-hmm.
It is. And that sound that the tripods make.
Yeah.
It's so haunting.
I thought this time when I was watching, I thought I would find the tripods kind of ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't. Because I don't know, because you know, you would, I mean, they made the thing in Scary Movie, one of the Scary Movies, I think they spoofed it. And I kept like thinking of that over and over again. Okay, but yeah, they were still pretty scary. But personally, even like when I first watched it, and I was I think 13 then, you know, the part when the probe comes and like looks for them underground,
mm-hmm.
that freaked the shit out of me like back then, and it still does.
It really does.
That scares me more than anything.
Just so many claustrophobic moments, like you're in so tense.
Yeah, and then they have some comical relief too.
Like, yeah,
that's nice too, I think.
Counterbalances
mm-hmm.
the terrifying aspect of it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And about it being the end of the world aspect, where I think it's really interesting, it's how the perspective of it, like you see humans so tiny and powerless.
Yeah.
They're just being squashed.
And I think it's also because of that introduction sequence where the narrator,
Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, Morgan Freeman. He
I didn't remember that. I was like,
where he talks about the like how the aliens watched us from above, like if we were some microbes. And since you hear that at the beginning, you always have that in mind when you watch the movie. And you can see like how these humans would look to the aliens.
I
really like that.
Though the aliens themselves weren't that big, if you think about it.
No.
No, they just have really great technology to squash
yeah.
us. But yeah, that's the second part of the movie. Like when you see the aliens, it gets really. I mean, it's sci-fi. right? So it gets, yeah. When you see it, it really ends.
Yeah. Because it's like the big explosions and like people running about and like, uh-huh. You know, a sort of hero figure somewhere, mm-hmm. and all that. So yeah, I thought like that thing, and even not even in that sense, like I thought the other two movies that we'll discuss, I thought they had like a message in there for both of them, mm-hmm. but I didn't really think there was like much of a message here. I mean, apparently there was like an anti-war message somewhere, which I personally did not get. That's off the Wikipedia page. But like, yeah, because this was like an apocalyptic movie for the sake of an apocalyptic movie. Exactly. Like it's a disaster movie, you know? Exactly. So, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't see any message either. It was just watching the world fall apart and how people would react.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, one of the most scary things, like it bothers me so much, is when they're in the car and everyone ambushes them.
Yeah.
Everyone mm-hmm. wants their car.
Yeah, and it's so realistic, because of course you would want to get into that car.
Everyone just turns into an animal or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think that's really scary, actually. Every time that part is on, I'm like, oh my god, we're so great.
And Dakota Fanning is so great in this. Like, I was thinking she must have been, like, what, I don't know, 10 or something?
So good, so good.
And she has, like, you know, that fear down, and she has, like, those eyes and stuff. So, yeah, I thought she was, like, the best. I hated the son. He's so annoying. And Tom Cruise is good.
I like Tom Cruise in this.
Me too. Yeah. But I like him in anything, but I just wish he would do more smaller movies too.
This was like, I remember, because when War of the Worlds was coming out, was like my brief obsession with Tom Cruise phase. Because only like this time when I was in Dubai, I was like, I was like, you know, I was clearing out like all of the junk that I've collected over the years, and had so many like clippings of War of the Wall, and I was like, what is this? This happened. So yeah, it was memories.
He was really big in that time. I think even mm-hmm. much more than now.
Yeah,
and he was very handsome in those times too.
Yeah.
And no one really knew that he was crazy, I guess. At least I didn't. So I think the world was a little unfair to Tom Cruise as an actor. Like, I really like, I like him. Sometimes I don't like the movies, or they don't really give him a chance to be an actor, because they're all action films. But sometimes he really has good things, like Minority Report.
Yeah,
I really like that one too.
I think he's really good in anything, but I think he consciously made some decisions that he wanted to be the action star, and now this is maybe all he gets. Like,
against all odds of his height.
I don't know.
Action movie star. Okay, so Matt?
The second movie we all watched is called The End of the World, or Werdensuntergang. It's a Danish movie from 1916, so it's a silent movie, directed by August Blom, whom I do not know, starring some people called Olaf Ferns and Ebba Thompson. But yeah.
Some people.
Actors.
I was really surprised that you chose a silent movie, because you generally hate silent movies.
I do, yeah, but that's why I always try to watch some more, just to find out maybe if I will like some. And I wanted for us to talk about some movies that were very different from each other. So
yeah,
I think it's cool to see one of the first. I think there's another one that was made before this, but it was one of the first apocalyptic movies.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, and it's a very simple story, a very typical apocalyptic story. it's set in, well, it could be set anywhere, but probably in Denmark, in a small town, where we get to know, we're introduced to a family who, a father and his two daughters, and one of them marries a rich guy against her father's will and moves to the capital. So then it goes to a few days later and years later, and a friend of the husband of that one daughter is a scientist, and he finds out that a comet is going to hit the world in a few months. So this rich man tries to convince a journalist to write that the comet is not going to hit the world, so that he can buy all the stock that people are going to sell. So then basically the comet does hit the world, and the world sort of ends, but doesn't, but we can talk about that later. So what did you think about the apocalyptic aspect of this movie?
I was very, very intrigued by the opening credits, because it looked so creepy. You know, like I was expecting full on horror when I watched it. It kind of reminded me of that German/Austrian, I think, movie. I don't know how to pronounce it. You'll know it better than me, but it's Das Weiße Band or something like that.
Oh yeah, Das Weiße Band.
Das Weiße Band. Good. Yeah, which is, I love it too. So I was expecting something really creepy. And I think all silent movies in a way are creepy.
I think all of them are generally annoying, but yeah.
I was actually surprised that, you know, they didn't have more of like the, with what I've learned in film study, you know, the exaggerated action moments, you know, like the look of horror and things like that. I was actually kind of like, they were much more normal than I would have thought.
I agree.
Yeah.
They were. It made it much more interesting. I really liked it, actually.
Even I did. I was, and in the beginning, I was a little bored, and my internet was like loading really slowly, so that was pissing me off.
Mm-hmm.
But especially like the end of the world aspect, I was really, really impressed. Like for that time, the way they were able to show it.
Yeah, like, me too.
Like, you know, like the disaster and stuff. It was really, really well done. So I really liked that.
And I like all the that aspect of trying to cover it up, and
I laughed, you know, like the first instinct of like the dude, or like not even the dude, like the first instinct they showed was like someone trying to make money off it.
Uh-huh.
It was so interesting, you know. I wrote it's like it's apocalyptic profiteering, you know. He immediately just thought like he would make money out of it, so that was like a really cool thing. And like as I was saying, you know, the messages in these movies, I thought this was like a lot to do with morality.
Yes,
because
in religion,
right? because the girl who leaves her dad and all that stuff, and like she suffers, and the stall character suffers because they're shown as like not very good people.
But
and
I didn't really get that. The Stoll, I think, was his name, the rich guy.
Yeah.
How did he, like, what was he going to do with all these stocks if if the world is going to end?
It doesn't make sense if it were the other way around, right? Like, the world is going to end. If it weren't going to end, and if he said it is going to end, so he sells everything, or someone sells it, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
No.
Why would he buy everything when the world is going to end?
It was so strange. I didn't get at all.
But
I found it really funny. I mean,
yeah.
So.
And it wasn't that long. It was enjoyable. I just thought that, like, the piano music all the time, even
bother you?
Yeah.
Well, I'd say. It doesn't bother me. Like, actually, whenever I stopped the film to do something, I would miss the music. I was like, oh, it's so silent in here. Because it's just in silent films, I think after a while, I don't even notice the music.
No,
it's just part of it.
I just thought it was so, like, inappropriate.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Sometimes.
You know, that was the thing. It was a relatively happy music going on for like a movie named The End of the World.
Like
so.
It should be in a Buster Keaton movie and not in a
So that was that. Yeah, the music did irritate me a little bit.
But I also think, I don't know if you agree, but like this movie was the apocalypse was sort of a rebirth in this one, like a rebirth of the world, like a new beginning, just biblical. I don't know, because it doesn't really end. So
they end together, but I didn't get it. Like, they ended together looking at the sky, and I was like, is it over? They seemed hopeful and scared at the same time. Like,
but the world, like, doesn't it say in the newspaper report that it's only like a part of Europe which will get hit?
Yeah, with North.
So it wasn't really. Maybe it was like just the end of their world.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
It was interesting. It was
Okay, yeah. Weren't you irritated that, like, the intertitles kept repeating themselves?
Yes.
Like, I just read this. that was, like, one of my biggest issues. I was like, oh, no, I just read this. But, yeah. It was mostly because my internet was loading so slowly that I was like, I just waited 5 minutes to read that thing again.
That bothered me, too, a little bit, but.
Yeah.
It was okay.
Yeah, it was okay.
I know, it's so old, you can't blame them.
No.
I know, it's 97 years old.
It's really old.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Okay, so the movie I chose is the 2011 Lars von Trier movie, Melancholia.
The earth is evil.
Yeah.
We don't need to grieve for it. Why would Leo grow? All I know is life on Earth is evil. There may be life somewhere else, but there isn't. How do you know? Because I know things.
Starring Kirsten Dunst, Charlotte Gainsbourg, and Kiefer Sutherland, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Kiefer Sutherland. For a second, I got confused between him and his dad. And we are going to focus on the second half of the movie. The first half of the movie is about Kirsten Dunst's character, and like she gets married, but she's depressed, and then a lot of stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
But since we are concerned with the second half of the movie, we see like how there's a planet called Melancholia, which was apparently hiding behind the sun. And then Charlotte Gainsbourg's character, whose name is Claire, and Kiefer Sutherland is her husband, and she has a son. She's the sister of Kirsten Dunst's character. And she is getting really scared because a lot of like, I don't think scientists, because they keep talking about how scientists don't think that anything would happen, but maybe like conspiracy theorists believe that Melancholia will come and hit the Earth, which might like make so really, really nervous. And at the same time, Kirsten Dunst's character, who has become very, very depressed since the first half of the movie, she comes back and moves in with them. So she has to like tackle both of these things. I guess that's more or less it. First of all, I want to ask one thing. Do you think Melancholia, the planet, is like actually a planet, or like does it like just stand for things?
I think I thought about this when I rewatched this movie, because I had thought about it a lot when I watched it the first time. So I think that it works in both ways. I think the movie works just as an apocalyptic movie with Melancholia just being this planet, but it would also work like in a symbolic way.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, and it's like apparently like Lars von Trier, what he wanted to show was how he made this movie after he had a bout of depression. So he wanted to show how like depressed people can be calm in really stressful situations.
Yeah.
And obviously being von Trier, he just chose to like end the world. And I mean the guy is a bit crazy, so
this was his most normal film I've seen so far, actually.
Yeah, I think so too.
This is the most, I don't know, I think it's the most depressing movie I've ever seen, though.
I thought that the first time I watched it, but right
yeah,
now...
Yeah,
I,
true, true.
But
this
now
time,
it's not
so
as
much.
Much.
Yeah. But the first time I watched it, I was just like, oh my god.
Yeah.
This is just killing me.
Yeah.
Anyways, no, I chose this movie because I really, the first time I watched it and this time, I was really struck by, like, the approach to apocalypse in this, because I've never seen it like that in any other movie, because, you know, as, like in War of the Worlds, you know, like, most apocalyptic movies will have, like, huge explosions or aliens or zombies or, you know, whatever arcs being built in 2012 and all that stuff. So it was really interesting seeing just like these handful of people in their own like isolated place reacting to such a thing.
And like it's inevitable. They're just waiting for it to happen.
And it's like, you know, like of their desperation and their despair at the end. So that was, and it's also like very beautiful. I mean, you can like, in a symbolic way, it can be seen as what like death is, right? So,
or melancholia.
So,
and it's so beautiful. It's just there's almost kind of mystique around it. Like, it's just very unique visuals. It's very beautiful. It really is.
Yeah, it doesn't.
The acting is all the more intriguing. I think it helps to it all.
Yeah, and it doesn't have these big scale things like you said, Nick. But it just has this one planet, but which is so beautiful.
Yeah.
So it's like you want it to come closer so you can see it even better.
And you know, and I I think if there is like an apocalypse, I think a lot of people, including myself, would have a reaction like that. Maybe Charlotte, but I don't know. I mean, I would be like, you know, I'd be like, what the hell can I do about it? You know,
nothing.
So I would have that. I mean, that's there for, like, most things. You know, I mean, Hunger Games was coming on TV, and I was telling my brother how I would die in that. Because it's like, you know, I'm not, like, fatalistic or something, but it's just, like, you know, I won't be able to stop it. So it's kind of like that. So I like that thing, you know, that a lot of people would react in that way, I think.
But I think...
Instead of just, like,
a lot of people would be like Claire too, I think.
But if you've seen, like, I recently watched Dancer in the Dark, and even that has, like, you know, that has a woman like facing her death sentence.
Okay.
And I think von Trier really likes like that last minute breakdown of women before they die. So, that's just like, that's what hit me this time. I was like, he really likes that final, like, oh, nothing can come out of this thing, which is just, I don't know. The world as Lars von Trier sees it must be a very weird place, a very dark place.
No, I think it's just the difference between death sentence a world colliding with ours, it's so unimaginable. I think I'd be really confused. Like, if someone on the news said, well, tomorrow night the world's going to end, I was like, oh, what?
Yeah.
I don't get it. Like,
It's okay. More than that, I think even though we didn't do it, that was the other film I was thinking of choosing. I might be more like seeking a friend at the end of the world.
Yeah.
You watch that?
No,
I might be a little bit more like that. Like, I would probably like. I know what I would do. I would watch Casablanca. But that would be it. But I wouldn't. Again, I'll have to accept it, I guess. So
yeah.
I like that
yeah.
aspect of this movie, you know?
Yeah, but actually, the silent film, when they tried to cover it up, the end of the world, I was thinking if I would want to know if the world is ending, and if it actually happened, would they say to us, like...
Yeah, like, why?
Yeah.
Well, imagine that scientists knew that the world was going to end tomorrow. Would they release that information, or just... would we want to know? It's like,
No, I don't think they should, because a lot of people... It will cause a lot of, like, madness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Suck also, right? Like, you're just like, I'm just gonna have... I mean, imagine if you have, like, really, like, horrible food or something, and that's, like, your last meal.
In a way, you have the right to know, because there may be things that you want to do or say, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, I hope that never happens.
Did you notice, I was thinking, in the silent movie, there was always the comet. You could see it in the sky.
Yes, I noticed
too.
Which
is also there in Melancholia. Like, you could always see Melancholia in sky. Like, especially in the second half, I mean. But I like that connection.
In Melancholia, it's a little cruel at times, because you have that moment where the planet is approaching, and then it seems like it's backing off, right?
Yeah.
And they're like,
The dance of the death, like, or something.
And my biggest issue with it, though, was, I mean, I've written about this. I have a thing about children dying in movies. And, you know, okay, technically, like, every child dying in the world. Okay? But that kid especially was so cute.
Yeah, he was.
And I was so, like, devastated by, like, the death of that kid. That was like the one which really affected me.
I was more shocked by the death of, you know, another. I don't know if we can spoil it, but can we?
Oh, right. Okay.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. We can spoil it.
Anyone who's hearing, just skip ahead a few minutes.
Okay. the death of Kiefer Sutherland's character. Uh-huh. I thought I had actually forgotten about it again, so it was like, what? He dies. But
I was also kind of pissed at him, right?
Yeah.
He was
so brave.
It was such a cowardly thing to do.
Yeah.
That was kind of really weird.
Didn't really expect it from his character.
But I actually love the... I know it's not in the theme, but I actually love the first half of the film.
Me too.
The wedding. It's like, they're trying to be happy, but then Kirsten Dunst's character is so weird.
Yeah.
It's trying to figure out what's wrong with her. Like,
but everyone around her is horrible as well.
Except for... I found Michael horrible when I first watched it, but now I really felt for him. I thought it was so sad.
I know, I really always liked Michael. I felt so bad for Michael.
But maybe it's because before I didn't know Alexander Skarsgård, and now I just feel so attached to him.
Now he's Eric Northman.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, he's a hero in the film, I think you could see that he was really tall inside that car. That guy's tall. And I love Kirsten Dunst. I'm a huge fan.
She was amazing in this movie. I mean,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So that was it for our main discussion. Do you have any plugs today?
Okay. So I would like to plug this post by Satie from Cinematic Corner. It's a visual parallels post in which she compared Sofia Coppola's Somewhere and Earrings by Alex Mitro of And So It Begins.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to, not just because of the post itself, which is great. I mean, City's Visual Parallels posts are like one of the best running features that I know of.
Mm.
And not only because of Alex's movie or because of like Somewhere, but I really, one of the things that I have so like loved being in the blogging world about is like how supportive and nice bloggers are.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like I personally have not like had any horrible sort of fights or anything of that sort. So,
no.
So this like this just goes to show how great and like again how great and supportive bloggers are, and I just love the idea of it. So I would like to plug that.
Have you seen Earrings? Because I didn't.
Yeah, I
didn't know that Alex had directed a movie.
Yeah, he's directed two, I think, but this is
cool.
The one which is there, and it's very devastating, I thought.
Oh.
And yeah, it's a very pretty movie. Like he didn't know he subconsciously he was inspired by Somewhere. He didn't even realize. And I think
I
the movies
Somewhere.
He has been inspired by are Shame.
Mm-hmm. He said that,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, some other movies, but I know I remember Shame, but yeah.
Yeah, I remember Shame somewhere. And you met? Got something?
Not really, no. I won't be blogging that much, but oh, I have. I don't know if it's a blog, a plug, but I'm going to my first film festival on Wednesday, so I'm really excited. Just wanted to say that.
That's cool.
I don't think I haven't blogged in like the last 10 or 12 days. And even though I want to, it's just that I have to start like studying really badly now. And I'm not very well. And Calcutta is very hectic right now. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think I will be blogging anytime soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same situation. I'd like to blog just a little thing. It's the... Actually, I'm not sure if we've talked about this before, but the city, I think it was Met, the Sydney Bollock Blogathon that is ending soon.
What was it about?
Sydney Bollock?
No, then it, no, that wasn't, no.
Well, I'm going to be a part of it. I think I have a post scheduled for Saturday, I think. And I urge you to read the other blogger's contribution if you're a fan of Pollock, I know. because it's very interesting. And I hope my post is interesting and unexpected. I hope.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, so again, I am Sophia. You can find me at filmflare.blogspot.com and at filmflare.pt in Portuguese. You can also find me on Twitter under msofiateixeira.
I'm Matt. I blog at limereviews.com. I blog at limereviews.blogspot.com. And you can find me on several places, for example, Twitter at limet9.
I'm Nikath, and I blog at beingnormaljean.blogspot.com. And you can find me on Twitter at Nikath_Z, which is NIKH80_ZOZ.
Okay. You can listen to our podcast on any of our blogs or subscribe through iTunes. We encourage you to give us your feedback on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/AcrossTheUniversePodcast. Feel free to contact us with any comments or questions. Our email is acrosstheuniversepodcast@gmail.com. Okay, so that was it for today. Join us next episode where we will talk about our favorite musicals.
Yeah.
Bye.
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 Words are flying out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither while they pass, they slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my open mind, possessing and caressing me. Jai Guru.